become Susan
Hello,
Rain of the
hello, hello.
Earth.
Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Richard has been leading a kind of Southern Baptist service in the school.
Hallelujah!
And
Praise Jesus.
Paul has a snake,
It's called Trouser Ed.
Lipton is one of those African American pastors, though we can't see him.
Please use his correct name. It's Trouser.
Trouser
Praise the
snake, the
Lord.
one-eyed trouser snake. They've been messing around with StreamYard chaps, and I can't. All I can see is a very small screen, and it might interfere with my ability to be fun. Like, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, cheers everybody. Cheers. Evening. That's what so they've said. Richard and Paul were saying to expand the screen, and then Richard was saying something about my phone. I don't want to go and get my phone, so there's a bit of an issue. But anyway, so cheers, everybody. Cheers, Occident. Cheers, Cass Arms is always right. Cheers, everybody. Cheers, Richard. Cheers, Lipton. Can you see so we can see you? Because we can't see them. It's just some red thing.
Yeah, I'm here. Just relaxing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's because you're so small.
Don't let us trouble you, Lipton. So you stay nice and relaxed, mate.
Yes, cheers. Capis, saludo.
Lachaim.
Yes, that.
Nazdravia.
And Slanger and Slangevar and Capis and all that. And yes, and welcome to the Ed. Have you ever launched from that just worked? What, sorry. Anyway, cheers, everybody. And welcome to the jolly. You know, I'm going to have to make this full screen. This is terrible. This is terrible. Like, what are they thinking? Welcome, of course, to the Jolly Heretic. We're our online public house meeting on Monday at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which we discuss our base staff and guests. What about that? No, that didn't work. And things that are expunged from our woke joke universities. Good. Now, there's loads going on. I'm trying to stay on topic. That's the problem. I need to be able to see the chat, right, so I can respond to it in a sociable fashion, and I can't see the screen with my colleagues on it because it's too small.
They've changed the format.
They've changed the format.
You've got Ed having a tism fit, and you've got Lipton going to sleep. There couldn't be a bigger contrast.
I don't like it. They've changed the
truly, truly Jamaican response to the crisis.
If I show
I think
comments
it's time
on
for
screen,
a nap.
Try that. What does that
there
do?
You go.
All yeah, right, I mean, big.
Just be warned, Ed. I'll start fighting with them if they say anything nasty.
Yes, all right, let's do that. Okay, yeah, that'll work, that'll do. All right, cheers, everybody. And now so the comments are on Richard's face. Yes. All right, and welcome. Oh, I thought it was better.
Not the worst thing that's been on Richard's face.
No, it's not the worst. There are worse things. But look, we should stay on topic. And we should try. And the topic, chaps, today...
That's why you always wear sunglasses.
Is contact lenses.
Don't let us put you off, Ed. Sorry,
Richard. Literally, we still can't see you. Is the collapse of the? Just sit up straight.
Just put your foot. Put your foot closer to the screen, so at least you get your foot.
Yeah,
Ooh.
Your
bow. At least the people in the chat can have a little tug.
Yeah, they like
is
that.
Is the collapse of the BBC
foot fetishes?
It was on Finnish. One of the things that we're getting, it reminds me. I wrote an article about it today, actually, Richard. It's like the response of a girl who's borderline or narcissist or whatever, and she's a liar and she's crazy, and you confront her with what she's done, and you get full on manipulation, like every technique in the book, rather than admit that she's done something bad, shouldn't have done, and that's what we're seeing. And I find it John Simpson, Nick Robinson, all of these prominent BBC characters, they've been confronted with something incredible and they just say, oh, it's a far-right conspiracy. It's a right-wing conspiracy. It's a right-wing conspiracy to destroy the BBC. Well, that doesn't really respond to what you've done, is it? Or they say, well, the BBC's not perfect. Well, what does that mean it's not perfect? That's like saying someone's been accused of noncery and you say, oh, well, they're not perfect. Well,
I'm not following you, Ed, because hasn't it been established that neo-Nazis hacked the system, did the Panorama edits... and for the last 20 years have been completely ignoring most salient issues in this country, unbeknownst to the BBC.
Hasn't it been established that the BBC are actually far right and are pro-Nigel Farage? I mean, I find it amazing, the responses that they're saying. The BBC, Ed Davey, the BBC is trusted around the world, and we should be defending our BBC because we're British. Yeah. What, these you people are appealing to patriotism now? Lipton, you're going to say something?
No, I was just about to say that you should sell the BBC.
Yes, but it's the manipulative responses that I find absolutely incredible. What they did, we discussed it last week, of course, what they did, it was clearly, quite deliberately, and with malice aforethought, and with pro-Kamala Harrisness aforethought, the week before the election, edit a clip so that there was two remarks separated by 54 minutes, seamlessly edited together, such that it seems like he wants to incite a crowd to violence, and then put that on, knowing it could be watched globally. And they're trying to say, well, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made. I cannot comprehend the psychology of doing that. It's pure gaslighting and lying.
Well, again, Ed, I think you're being completely unfair. For example, to have the son of a Hamas terrorist as a spokesperson on, or the narrator of a whole documentary, is a mistake any lobotomized journalist could make. So stop picking on them.
So I'm not familiar with this. Tell me about this.
They did a documentary about life in Palestine. And the narrator of the story was a young boy, and the theme of the documentary, inverted commas, was, isn't it terrible to live in Gaza as a young Palestinian boy? What they failed to realise was he was the son of a leading Hamas terrorist.
They did realise he was. And they
well, in either case, either idiots or malevolent propagandists for Hamas.
I mean, I didn't know that. Right, so that's more.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of them. You could just keep listing them.
And so the idea, it becomes the kind of the waiter's fallacy, not waiter's fallacy, what's it called? The waiter's thing, when you shortchange somebody, that if the shortchanging is always in a particular direction, it's not a mistake. It's deliberate. It's deliberately shortchanging somebody. It's incredible. But what I find the most amazing is, as I said, and that's why I'll get Richard in on this, is the response, the manipulative response. It's like it's deflection. It's muddying the water. It's shooting the messenger. It's just a constant series of manipulative techniques rather than accept anything. And they hushed it up for 6 months as well. This is incredible. This guy, Prescott, did this report, this internal memo, which he went into detail about everything that had happened, and they were just in denial for 6 months, and they would never have told us. They would never have told us if it wasn't the fact that somebody decided to leak it to the Telegraph, some informer.
It's I just listened to the BBC statement. I was just in the gym here, and I put it on, and I thought it was a masterclass, really, in manipulation, because what they did was it's all about the framing. So if you want to manipulate somebody or manipulate a situation, frame it as if. So they framed themselves, and the response is framed as though they're the victim of some kind of an attack. And that what they want to prioritise is the sovereignty of the BBC. And they go on to make this absurd statement about the diversity and kindness of the British people, and British culture is in the BBC's hands. An attack on the BBC is an attack on the best of British culture. And I was thinking, I was listening to this going, hang on. This doesn't sound like a statement from an institution that has deliberately acted in bad faith and gone against what they're supposed to be doing, which was faithfully reporting the truth. This sounds like an institution who's been targeted and attacked, and they're very, very sad about it, and they can't control it, and they can't control the terrible consequences of this attack that's been placed upon them. There is zero voice of accountability, zero. There was nothing in that statement that said, we did something that was wrong and we shouldn't have done that, and now these are the consequences. Wonderful. Well done to the BBC. Brilliant manipulation.
But Richard, can I also ask you about the mental illness aspect of it? Because I've just seen someone in the comments claiming the BBC is actually pro-Zionist. So this is despite the fact they've manipulated a documentary to be pro-Hamas. So when the evidence is in front of people, they have this mental illness where they just keep repeating the opposite. And the BBC has been found with their hand in the cookie jar. It's not a question of political interpretation. They have manipulated the truth when their job is supposed to be journalists. The Observer newspaper on Sunday, I think it was, linked to The Guardian, they defended them. And surely a newspaper of whatever political stripe should be ultimately about investigative journalism and collecting facts. And yes, newspapers have political spins, but when it's reducible to an issue of fact and you end up defending the offenders just because you're on the same political side as them, we should all just give up. What's the point?
I would say to that, in fairness, I am not a Zionist, and I think the idea that the BBC are Zionists is absurd. They're clearly not. I mean, they based on recent reporting, they're obviously not pro Israel. So I do think that accusation is absurd. And even though I'm anti Israel and anti Zionism, I'm not pro BBC. Sorry, Ed. Go on.
No, apparently we have a competitor today. That's why there's only 784 viewers at the moment. Lipton will make Lipton very sad, because our friend, or my friend, Rebecca, is interviewing someone I've never heard of called Emily Yolkis. And people are insufficiently loyal to be on the Jolly Heretic, even though we're here every month.
There won't be any fucking cock jokes in that interview, you bastard.
Who's that?
I don't know who she is, but that's what the chat is saying. And I don't know who Emily Yolkis is. Should I interview Emily Yolkis? She sounds Greek.
Why don't we stream what they're doing and we'll react to it with cock jokes? We'll have two sensible adult women.
She's the most based woman. How have I not heard? Cardoso is saying that Emily Yolkis is the most based woman in the world. How have I not heard of the most based woman in the world?
Exactly. The girl.
Yeah, but Ed, it's a very low bar.
Yeah.
I thought the most based woman in the world was that Spanish bird that you were telling me to have. You were all telling me to have on about 5 years ago. That Franco supporting Sieg Heiling Spanish girl. I thought she was the most based woman in the world, but now we have a new one.
I don't think when you say you all, you mean the chat. You don't mean
yeah. I mean the chat. I mean I'm currently addressing the chat while looking at the postage stamp sized image of the four of you. I shall go back in. But no, it's just Bubba Kate. Yeah, Bubba Kate was quite based. But it's just absolute manipulate. And the what's the word I want? Can't remember. But that word, right? Of the appeal to nationalism. The idea, these people that have been saying for ages and ages and ages. What's the word, Paul? When you do something
green jelly.
Yeah, that's the one. The green jelly, right? Of the appealing to British nationalism all of a sudden. So on the one, it's nations
trope.
Nations are a social construct.
Is it trope you're looking for, Ed?
No. It's never that word.
Is it tripe?
Yes, the tripe of them appealing to nationalism and saying nations are a social construct, and then suddenly they're saying, no, we must defend the BBC. The BBC is the essence of England. The BBC is warm beer and cricket. The BBC is suddenly everything they've rejected and ridiculed over the last 30 years.
Ed, as you're speaking, you know they call it anti-Beeb. I think what the BBC's become is a dowager old aunt who comes home one day presenting herself as Bill, smoking a pipe and growing a beard. I mean, that's what the BBC anti-Beeb has turned into.
No, I think anti-Beeb is
anti-Beeb has become an anti-Bob, Uncle
she's
Bob.
She's a slag. She's one of these aunts that you get, and she's got into her 40s. She's never married, no kids, and she just shags around. Probably has tattoos.
I'm getting excited, Ed.
But she's mentally ill. Like she's unstable, she's exciting. When you're a young man or whatever, she'll take you to the heights of heaven, but she'll also take you to the depths of hell. She's BPD. That's what she is. As Richard and I are going to discuss at some point, she's BPD. She's a man killer, and she's probably got a few STDs as well. And Paul, interesting statistic. Apparently, in
STDs. Got to mention something to Paul now.
Yeah. In 1892, one in five men in London had syphilis.
All right, that's fascinating.
I was watching it's a channel. I remember.
Now it's one in four.
Yeah, there's a channel. Yes, because there will be when you move there. That doesn't work statistically. But there was an. Interesting
I'm not in an open relationship with Richard like you are, Ed.
We won't talk about that now. But
he wants to be in our polycule.
Richard and I have an agreement. There's this quite interesting channel I like called They Got Away with Murder. I think I told you about it a while ago. And there's this he showed, and it's got like a million views, this one, that George V was murdered by Lord Dawson of Penn. Everyone kind of knows that. But also he argued that Prince Albert Victor, which was the older brother of George V, who was mentally retarded and had syphilis, was also murdered.
Independently or combined?
No, independently, because George V was in 1936, and this guy was 89.
No, no, the guy who had syphilis and was mentally disabled, were they linked?
Independently. So as a child, he was just stupid. And then, in addition to this, he got syphilis and so on. And so they took him out. So the royal family has form for these things. But anyway, that's going off topic slightly.
And that's not even mentioning Diana.
Well, exactly. I didn't mention her. I did mention it, but Paul did.
I could see it in Richard's eyes. He was thinking,
or how the Queen died of old age.
Yeah, that was convenient, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really old. Old age. Really who dies old. Of old age? Nobody dies of old age. Dies of deficiency, a specific problem, specific illness. Yeah, she died of old age. How convenient.
Bumped her off. Bumped her off, didn't they?
Yeah. How convenient. But anyway, yes.
Lipton, did you fancy the Queen? Because you like older, wide-beamed women, don't you?
I liked her a great deal.
No. Was her bust not big enough, though?
She was not Anne Widdecombe level, was she, Lipton?
What?
She wasn't Anne Widdecombe level of, you like the bass.
But I really like the Queen. She should have lived forever.
Yeah, but did you like?
No, I'm not going there. No.
Fine. Did you just blush, Lipton?
It is. It's a shame. I had a friend at university, and it dies off with age. Blushing. It's an age related thing. And he, in his mid-20s, still blushed. He still blushed. He did. And in fact, I met a guy that was about 40 years and years ago, and he still blushed. So it's a shame. Fortunately, I don't. But I.
But you always look quite gammony, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just.
Ed, who wrote Frankenstein? Who wrote Frankenstein? Mary Shelley.
Mary Shelley.
I agree. Her husband only wrote the preface and the poem in the book. Yeah. He helped her a great deal, but he didn't write it.
What?
Frankenstein, the book.
Listen here, Lipton. You better straighten yourself out.
Lipton. Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein.
Stay focused.
Yes, not her husband, Percy.
Lipton, you've taken us off topic.
Which he is wont to do from time to time. He has a whip. He has a whimsical mind.
I just want all these people. We've only got 1,000 viewers. This is absolutely unacceptable.
Don't worry, Ed. We'll get it down further.
Yeah.
I do this to fuck them all off.
I do this to get. You know,
I'm only warming up.
We do this to get narcissistic supply, for God's sake. And you're all watching Emily Ukis, the most base woman in the universe.
We're down to the hardcore, the Tism army. They're behind us. We can't go wrong.
We can say anything to these lot. These are the truly based degenerates.
I remember when the people in the audience identified as the taint squad because of the correlation between taint length and testosterone, and they were all known as the taint squad, and they say evening taint squad, the faithful resident poet, exactly, the faithful like you and other members of the taint squad. The low numbers on YouTube is strange. Yeah, well, as I've explained, most people watch through Twitter these days. People don't bother with YouTube. It's we're being instructed by Benjamin1720 to talk more bollocks.
no problem, Benjamin1720.
Absolutely no 20. Problem no with problem. That. I will steer it back. To the BBC because that's what we're focusing on.
The BBC legs on us.
And the they've got to. I mean, they can't. I don't see how they can get over this. It was reported on Finnish television, and Finns I know are agog and aghast that they at what they've done. That they consider it. This is how can you do that? It's nobody knows about it till today in Finland. It wasn't reported. It's been reported now that what they've done. what we knew weeks ago. And they can't believe it. Because
what they don't seem to realise, the BBC, is that you can, you know, you can trade on the supposed reputation for as long as you want. But once you lose a reputation, as you found out in those toilets in the pub in Liverpool, Ed, it's gone. Your reputation, once it's gone, is gone.
And that was particularly interesting, the way that the defenders, like Ed Davey, keep saying, it has a reputation around the world as the most respected provider of news or whatever. Right. It did.
Yeah.
It's like saying Jimmy Savile, oh, he's a national treasure. He's a national treasure. Yeah, he was. Yeah. And then new information emerged.
Yes. Latterly, not so much. Same with the BBC. It's latterly, not so much.
Not so much. Not so. Or Rolf Harris or Harold Shipman or whatever.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great doctor, but latterly, not so much.
Not so much. I had a friend, I had a tutee actually at university who was from Hyde in Manchester, and he was one of Harold Shipman's patients. Said he was a very, very nice man. Used to give him lollipops and talk about Zizek, and latterly,
it's
from sort of
sense.
The year 2000 onward,
people need to be dead.
Information emerged.
What? On the other hand,
instead of healing them, I heal them. Of him
as a particularly good person.
There is a third pill. It will heal you, or what?
And so I, you know, it's I can't believe the you know, with there's a channel that's quite interested in psychology. Or at least
I think Ed's still speaking.
Yes, I am. But at least both me and Richard are. Then it's just so it's so textbook.
Ooh, yeah,
the responses are so textbook.
There is a bright side, Ed. The bright side is that BBC Future is still really good. Yeah, BBC Future is really good. I like their articles on psychology and science.
Will the BBC Verify report the BBC to BBC Verify?
I mean, BBC Verify, which is paid for by the taxpayer and is part of the absurdly expensive licence fee, which I believe now is almost £200.
£180, I think.
£180?
For raw propaganda.
Which is absolute rubbish, and the woman that's in charge of it, Spring or whatever her name is, Marianne Spring, lied on her CV and still managed to keep her job. And it's like I can only compare it. Well, I'm not being very creative here, but it's like we are in an abusive relationship, or the British people rather, not so much me, are in an abusive relationship where they're lied to and gaslit and they have to pay for the privilege.
And I like that metaphor. That's a good metaphor. I like it.
Yeah. And then they have these people who are friends of the family or whatever, like Ed Davey or people that just are part of who are defending that relationship and are saying, and that person, and saying, no, you know, don't go to the police. Don't do that. Sort it out between you. You know, she won't do it again or whatever. How can there be trust after this when you know that this was Panorama? This wasn't any program. It wasn't some shit program that's on at 11 o'clock at night that nobody watches on BBC Four or whatever the hell they have these days. I don't know. I don't live in the country. But it was their flagship, one of their most important programs. There would have been so many eyes that were cast over this. There would have been fact checking. There would have been making sure everything was fine. Clearly, because it's Panorama, and yet that obvious manipulative, deliberate lie got through.
Lecturing. Why don't you start your own media company?
I do, Jolly Heritage.
No, like on TV. We should be on TV, like GB News.
Why don't you do it, Lipton? Why are you trying to ride on the coattails of the white man? Take that white power away from him and centralise yourself, brother.
People at GB News like me, but regard me as too based because I talk about, the kind of things you talk about, Lipton. And so at the moment...
Lipton, if you sell out to the Jews, you can have your own media channel.
Well, I do like Jews. I do like Jews.
I can imagine.
Live on YouTube here.
You start speaking on GB News and their senior executives start sweating like Hugh Edwards' paperboy.
That's another thing. Like, think of the cover up there. Let's talk about that. So we've had him
off as well, you know.
Paid him off.
He got a massive payoff.
Where are you talking about?
Hugh Edwards.
Okay. I remember you, Edward. I remember him. Yes.
He was his newsreader.
Not personally, I assume, Lipton.
No, not he didn't molest me.
You're far too old. Far too old. But the Hugh Edwards in 2023 or whatever it was, Philip Schofield, for God's sake, and then this, and everyone knows about it. If you're part of any sort of subgroup or any even vague organization, even like a conference, like a right wing conference or whatever, everyone's gossiping about the conference bike. Everyone, you know, is talking about these things. Everyone knows. Mm-hmm. Right, everyone knows. Like, if there was one day an investigation into like the British based right, you know, there's all kinds of things I'm not going to say publicly that I know, obviously. This is always like this, and so they knew. They of course knew about Hugh Edwards. Loads of people would have known about him, and Philip Schofield, and Rolf Harris, and
there was Finger Bob hiding in plain sight.
Finger Bob was hiding in plain sight, as was Mr. Ben. What relationship do you think he had? Where do you think he got the money from to never go to work and just every day make his way to a fancy dress shop, right? Drugs, clearly. Yeah. Everyone knows that Festive Rose
very festive.
His house was very festive because he was dealing crack. Everyone knows that. And that was covered up by the BBC. Bagpuss, nonce.
When I'm on GB News, I'm going to talk about nutrition during slavery. That will be the topic. Richard, did you know that during slavery, Black people in America were taller than even Europeans and even aristocrats? Did you know that, Richard?
I did, because I've studied it extensively. Did you know the slave trade proportionately killed more white people than blacks? On the transatlantic slave trade, I think your mortality rate if you were white was 20%, and if you were black, it was 10%. So it was like double, because we just couldn't tolerate the conditions.
Herbert Klein, he said around 15%, the mortality rate was about 15%, and the blacks died due to pre-shipboard conditions, not because they were packed together like sardines.
That's crazy, isn't it? That's almost unbelievable, but that's what they're telling us, yeah. No, I did know that about the slaves. It's very interesting.
I read that on the slave ship Zog, they all got dysentery. And so to deal with it, they inserted bits of rope up the anuses of the slaves. And that seems to me to be a really short-term solution.
It's not medically sensible. No. I think, in fact, that would just create explosive...
And was there a designated person whose job it was to pull the ropes?
I assume it was the cabin boy, but I don't know. But that's just an absurd thing to do, isn't it? You're just building up to pressure, and then eventually you're just going to have bits of rope firing across the galley.
Well, not necessarily, because you're assuming there's a gaseous pressure whereby the gas could actually desublimate into more solid form.
Yeah,
wouldn't dysentery guarantee that? No.
Yeah, wouldn't dysentery mean it would just come out as sort of liquid? I mean,
but it can't because of the rope. So then it begins to solidify.
That's how great granddaddy Dutton died, wasn't it, Ed, in World War One?
Oh, you mean our relative? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he died of. But he fought for his country while dying. His dysentery was so explosive that when he died, he took out 10 Germans.
Amazing!
It was an amazing guy.
He screamed "Allahu Akbar" and farted his final fart.
He farted his final fart, and all the things. A German machine gunner got it in the eye and was knocked out.
This is our mutual great grandfather. So this is you can believe this is a true story. Hello, work, Bob.
It's not. It's your great grandfather, but it's the descendant of my 12-time great grandfather.
I just wanted to characterize it for the retards. That's all.
Yeah.
He's called Dutton, so therefore it must be our mutual great grandfather,
George Dutton of Tatton Hall, 1500 to 1554, my descendant of George Dutton, he moved out of Tatton Hall. Whereas Richard's just stayed there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Like a pig in the trough.
Yeah, just in Tatton Hall. By the way, if you go to Tatton Hall, it's not a very nice place. Good. So we've moved off the topic. Onto the slave ship Zog and the effects of... yes. I think it's okay, it's doing all right. But yeah, the point is that I can't see how they're going to get beyond this. As you say, when trust is lost, it takes a very long time to get trust back, whether with a person or with a group or
that should be true. Like, you're being reasonable and you're being logical, but don't we just have a nation of drooling NPCs who love Keir Starmer, who want to go to work with a butt plug-in that monitors their every fucking transaction. They're subs, they're cuckolds. They love this stuff, don't they? So they'll stand by the BBC no matter what they do, as long as the BBC is attacking the right people, because they're mongs.
I find it so strange that despite this, the intensity of the BBC's anti-white rhetoric, white British people still like the BBC.
Cuckolds. They're cuckolds. It's the most absurd, suicidally empathetic, cuckolded, simping mindset, mind virus that I've seen in human history. I can't think of another that compares.
But don't you think there's a certain irony? Well, it's not irony. I just think it's a pattern of life that when an organization becomes as incestuous and what Lipton and I talk about week after week, no consequences. Eventually, you create the conditions of your own downfall. It's like the Roman Empire. It degenerates. They keep defending themselves, but there comes a point, the Ceausescu moment, when the thing doesn't... It's like a Starship Enterprise. It's not going to hold, is it, Captain?
Oh, I have big news, people. I have really big news. So in Jamaica, there's a university called the Michael University College, which started as a teacher's college, but now it's like a university. Jane Michael, she died, and her estate was used to build schools in the West Indies for Black people, and there's now the Michael Trust, and the Michael Trust funded the Michael University. However, Jane Michael, in her will, wanted to leave her wealth to British people. She wanted to redeem British people who were enslaved by North Africans, but her wealth went to Black people in the Caribbean.
Oh.
Seriously.
You gave the money to Black people.
And that's the kind of thing the BBC wouldn't report. And they'd also put out videos stating that Romans were Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, and so on. And what Richard talked about, a Ceausescu moment, it takes something when you've been lied to, and manipulated and lied to like this, whether by the BBC or by a sexy woman, it takes something big to admit, no, I am being lied to. And of course, they can be so manipulative and charming that you almost want to convince yourself you're not being lied to, even though you know you are being lied to. You want to persuade yourself you're not being lied to and that you are unreasonable and you should just believe them.
So if somebody was in that type of a relationship and it was personal, at that point, I would step in and say, what is it that you're afraid of losing if you accept that you're being lied to? And to be fair, in a minor moment of compassion from those people, because I have people like this in my family and I see the world through their eyes. And I think, of course, they're supporting the BBC and Keir Starmer and the new tax regulations and all of this totalitarian nonsense. Because if they actually say the whole fucking house of cards could fall. If you say, no, the BBC is a propaganda machine and they're acting in bad faith, which it is, then the knock-on effect to your whole world view would start to collapse. And I can see why they're fighting it from their, you know, midwit point of view.
I have a secret. Yeah. I have another secret. I read this in a book written by a famous professor from the Netherlands. And the book said that when Europeans went to that continent, they had a problem doing trade because the people who lived on the continent did not want to work. They wouldn't export anything to Europe. They refused to produce.
And which continent are you talking about?
I can't say it.
No, you can't say. He's not allowed to say, but I think you know which one. And
I don't even know what a continent. What are you talking about, Lipton?
There is indeed evidence of that, Lipton. You're quite right. Yes. That's why they have to bring in.
You can say the name of the country.
That's enough. We don't need to go into any more detail. We'll just go back to what we're talking about. So yeah, what is the consequences of it is that if you question that and you accept that the BBC is just a propaganda machine for wokeness and it's full of lies and they just lie, then what else lies? What else lies? What else is untrue?
The point I wanted to make was, this is what I'm saying about, we've entered a new phase whereby there used to be a certain context within which people with different political views could have a political discussion, and you'd know on what basis, either of logic or interpretation of facts, you disagreed with each other. Now we're in a situation where even when factually things are proved to be a certain way, people are digging in and they don't care about the truth anymore. Even, I know the truth can be debated, but even most basic aspects of the truth are now not up for discussion. So we've always had siloed communities, but I think the actual possibility to have a coherent argument with people is rapidly diminishing. And what happens then? It really is just pure conflict because there's no discussion left.
One of the things that Ed Davey said was that, great, the BBC can move beyond this and they can do what they should be doing, which is fighting the rise of Farage and Reform. I was like, hang on. The BBC is paid for compulsorily by everybody in Britain. About 30% or something, or 35% of people intend to vote for Reform at the next election. And you're saying the BBC, who are funded by these people, should focus on fighting Reform.
It's disgusting. That's disgusting. That's a disgusting thing to suggest. It's outrageous. And the fact that that's a normal statement and that nobody really sort of bats an eyelid tells you where we're up to.
Yeah. He doesn't understand at all the point, which is that everybody, it's always been unrepresentative of the British people, who works for the BBC. They live in London for a start, which is unrepresentative of Britain.
That's unfair, Ed, because they relocated to Salford, and what they do is all the London stars get the train up to Salford, enter the studio, do their bit, and get the train back to London. So having studios in Salford really has addressed the disparity of where BBC staff live.
And I bet they put that train on expenses as well.
So yeah, first class.
First class, and it doesn't come out of their massive salary. And even if they do live in Salford, I'm sure they just gentrify Salford and find. I'm sure there's areas of Salford now which used to be scummy, that are now gated communities where.
No,
where,
but there are areas of Salford now that actually have pavement. That's how gentrified it's become.
And streetlights.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they're completely out of touch. They don't represent the British people, and that's kind of okay. If they understand, if they have a sense almost of noblesse oblige and try to represent the British people and try to think, what is it the common man wants? What is it the ordinary person on the Clapham omnibus, thinks and understand that? And they did used to do that.
But Ed, there is a bit of payback. So Ed Davis is going to come up against, I saw you see footage occasionally, but a Labour MP, I forgot which town it was, female Labour MP went in with a couple of aides to a pub. And very naturally and organically and spontaneously, people recognised her and just started telling her to bugger off, get out. And this is a Labour politician who's supposed to be in touch with the working class. So Ed Davis can hang out around in certain vegan-friendly cities. But if he goes anywhere half normal in the north of England, he's going to get a size 13 up his backside. So they'll cotton on eventually.
They do have big feet, Northerners. That's actually well known. Both Richard and Paul have ridiculously big feet.
Yeah,
I have a very sensible 9.5 because I'm a Southerner. But my grandfather, who was from Liverpool, he was like size 14.
No, I have feet like SpongeBob.
Liverpool. I'm sending an email right now to the Liverpool Politics Club.
Are you?
Yes. To talk about reparation. I'm going to invite myself to go there.
I think you should, Lipton. I think you should make more of the fact that you need to talk about reparations and what you need personally, which is a substantial salary because you're you.
would you be paid like in the Andrews?
Yeah, it's like what, him. Yeah.
Once we get around to 2029, will you be pro reform? Do you think, Ed?
Oh God! I mean, like by then I've lived abroad for so long. I just vote Parasormalizer, and that's what I do. I just vote Parasormalizer because someone I know is the candidate. Just vote for them.
You vote for what?
Parasormalizer.
What the fuck is that?
It's a political party in Finland. It's the second largest party in the Finnish parliament. True Finns.
Ed, if you're still in Finland in 2029, do you think you'll be able to pronounce your own address by then?
No, that's never going to happen. No, that's not happening. I've got a friend, a number of friends whose Finnish is better than mine, and he can pronounce everything. It's quite amazing. But he can even pronounce my address. But In fact, one time, my wife's sort of elderly, sort of second cousin once removed or whatever met him, and couldn't believe he wasn't Finnish. But he's not. He's British. But it's just like no accent. It's I don't know how he does it. It's extraordinary. Whereas my Finnish was probably better 10 years ago than it is now, because I don't use it anymore. I used to use it on a daily basis, and then
so
I got
now you just point a lot and shout at people.
Yeah, mainly that. Yeah, like for example, the other day I was thinking, what does huolto mean? And then I remembered it was maintenance, but it took me a while. So that's showing you that's showing you the problem if you don't practice it, because you don't practice it. I used to practice it more because more people didn't speak English, but now all these people that don't speak English, they're dead.
If I was your family, I'd just speak all, get them to all speak Finnish and ignore you.
No, but I can understand what they're saying most of the time. But actually talking
Dad's a bit of a knob, isn't he?
Yeah, but don't you find that in Spanish you can understand more than you can say?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's exactly like that. So
I wish I'd learned Italian. I learned Spanish, but they just run all the words together. Whereas Italian is na-na, na-na, na-na. It's got a nice rhythm and you can hear more.
Weirdly, Finnish has a similar rhythm to Italian. So what it kind of, if you don't speak any Finnish, what it sounds like is like nio, so that noise, which is a little bit like some kinds of Italian, although not the weirdest is Northern Italian. Italian in the far north, it doesn't really sound like Italian at all. I mean, Italian in like Naples or something is like it's like Italian. But Italian in the north of Italy doesn't sound like Italian.
Strong dialects, I think, because I spent a bit of time in Friuli, and that's a self-contained dialect. I think Venice has their own dialect. Because I was there with an Italian speaker, and she was saying there was a woman buying fruit, and they were talking in Venetian dialect, and she could only pick up like one in every three words. It's not standard Italian.
Have you had a girlfriend from like every country?
Yeah. Oh, wait, I travelled a lot, and yeah. I don't like travelling, but it's really good if you can spend a bit of time in a country with an amorous partner.
Or the sausage machine tailor.
Yeah.
Because apart from anything else, you just go to brilliant restaurants. I hate being a tourist. So if you're with a local, your food is so much better.
Yeah, I was very naive when I went to India, and an Indian friend of mine said, my friend is a military officer in the Indian Army. He's in Delhi at the moment. He'll guide you and your wife around. I was like, I can't ask for that. That's ridiculous. I can't ask that of him. But bloody hell, very quickly, I wish I had.
I have something to tell you, Eddie. You can't tell anybody else. But only 10% of Indians can code accurately. Only 10%. And 80% of your engineers are unfit for the knowledge economy.
Yes. And a lot of the doctors in the hospitals don't actually have medical degrees.
They're known for lying. Like if you Google lying in Indian culture, even academic articles will come up.
Lipton. Listen here, you.
Listen here, Lipton. Give him a nice cool glass of iced tea. He needs to cool off.
Can I just applaud Lipton because he's found an amazing new form of encryption whereby you go on a public platform and speak behind your hand. And no one can ever report him for anything he says. It's genius.
We're about halfway through. So those of you who are new, hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are an online public house. We meet on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, or is it 3 p.m. at the moment New York? I don't know, in which we discuss based science and interesting stuff and psychology and stuff that is expunged from our woke joke universities. If you are new, will you please subscribe? You subscribe here on YouTube and subscribe to my Substack. That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based science, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make, and if you like what I do, you can support the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, who is called Rolf Shipman on the grounds that he looks like Rolf Harris and Harold Shipman. His YouTube channel is called Readers of the Lost Art, where he gives a wry and generally quite sort of malcontented look at various aspects of art and so forth. So please go and subscribe.
Mostly literature.
Literature.
Started off doing a lot of visual art. Now I do literature with a lot of images, but I've mostly veered off into literature. I may return to visual art in more depth.
Excellent. And then below we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. Lipton Matthews has published a number of books on Amazon, so go and have a look at those. And also, he has his own channel, Lipton Matthews, so go and subscribe there. And then finally, in the bottom corner, we have Richard Grannon. His channel is Richard Grannon, where he coaches you through your narcissism. And then he has a more intellectual channel called the Richard Grannon Philosophy Channel, where he does more base kind of stuff. And so go and subscribe over there. And he's also written a book, and it's called A Cult of One, which I've read, and it's very good.
No, Ed. This is recent news. In Sweden, online hate and anti-immigrant extremism are driving women out of public life. What a stupid headline!
We have immigrants out here at the John Harris Public House, Mr. Quinn, who has written the following poem with regard to today's discussion. I'm sure that you all would agree we don't like the damn BBC. It's highly left-wing, and this is the thing. Why should we pay them the fee? Excellent. Thank you much, Mr. Quinn. And if you like Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then there is a book of his Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. And I think he also has a YouTube channel for which you should subscribe. Okay, I've finished now. What were you going to say, Lipton?
No, I read the headline from The Guardian. So somebody at The Guardian was saying that the online right is forcing women out of public life because of its anti-immigration stance. But immigrants are not beneficial in Europe, especially when we're talking about women. Many of them commit sexual harassment, from especially people from Afghanistan and Syria.
Yes. That may be the case. Statistically, they may be overrepresented. Yes, I don't know how that it's. I suppose it is. It is an unfortunate consequence of feminism.
Don't you start your own TV channel, as Lipton suggests? Can I please nominate Lipton as the continuity announcer?
Even
this is what end-to-end encryption looks like.
James Watson died.
I know James Watson died. I was the first person to announce.
Yeah, but you didn't announce it on the show. You did not announce it on the show.
I did. I did a live stream where I announced his death.
On this show, no, you didn't.
Yes,
see.
It hadn't been announced. It hadn't been announced in the newspapers yet. I was rung by a friend of his who had been in turn rung by his son. And I was told that Jim had died, and so. Yeah, it's a good point. I announced that in case we will know. Everyone knows by now. But good old Jim. Cheers to Jim and rest in peace. And I hope he's offending woke people in heaven. If he won't, there won't be any woke people in heaven. They'll all be in hell. So
sodomized by demons.
I hope that he's being
forever
based in heaven, which is a based place.
Drinking the devil's boiling jizz.
I don't know about you, Ed. but I really resent the passing of the Great Race.
What?
The passing of the Great Race.
The death of old white men. I don't know what's going to happen when all of these old white academics die. Academia is just going to go to shit.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that's unfortunately a bit of a problem, isn't it? The generation that didn't necessarily believe in God. I didn't think Jim believed in God, but they had certain religious values still, like that are associated with religious belief, like a really strong belief in certain things, like the importance of telling the truth. And once that goes, then you're in trouble. And that's what I think you have. You have this kind of neo-Thomism, whereby the idea of the scholastics was that your purpose is to understand the world, and the world is God's revelation, and you should understand it better. And therefore, to lie about the nature of the world is blasphemous. You shouldn't do that. And we lost in universities the belief in God. Most intelligent people don't believe in God, but we kept the belief in truth and the importance of truth, and now we don't even have that. We don't have that at all.
No, this is a real crisis, Ed. I'm really worried. I'm upset. Like recently, I wanted to interview this academic, and he died last year, and I was just so upset.
Bloody inconsiderate of him, Lipton.
Yes, it's true. Like, I was really upset. He has this really base paper on technology in Africa.
I wanted to interview Michael Persinger, him what invented the God helmet. You know, the God helmet that you put it on and it stimulates you electrically and you have a religious experience. And then, and I corresponded with him in about 2010 or something. And he was fine. And then he died 2 years later. And I didn't know that. And then I get in touch with him and the email bounces back and whatever, and it turns out that he's died.
Well, so get yourself a Ouija board.
I didn't kill him. Yeah, well, if I'm going to use a Ouija board, Paul, then I could interview like Francis Galton, Charles Darwin. The sky's the limit.
Why don't we do a live stream with you and a Ouija board?
Well, because it's only I'd need multiple people, wouldn't I?
You've got multiple people. You've got us.
No, but we'd all have to touch the glass in the middle, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So it doesn't. A Ouija board doesn't work with one person. You've got to have at least two people to have a quorum, and then you can, you know, get in touch with your gran or Charles Darwin.
Oh, Nanny Low.
Yeah, Nanny Low. Yeah.
I have to go in 7 minutes because I'm a dirty steroid user and I was caught with it at the American border and I now need to apply for a visa so I can re-enter the United States. So I have seven minutes in which you should pour out all of your vitriol and insults and really have your fill of them to the chat and to you gentlemen before I go, because you know I love it, because I'm a little masochistic slut.
All right, Richard. What kind of dodgy lawyer meets you this late at night anyway?
Well, they're in America, and they're American gentlemen.
I see. I was confused. Yeah. I assumed it was a Cypriot lawyer.
No. Cyprus is probably where I will be locating in the longer term, but I must go to America in the shorter term for various business reasons and because I have family there. So, yes, I have to beg. They want all of my information, all of my information, my favorite porn niches, my masturbation habits, all of it. And then they'll consider giving me a special visa for naughty people.
So why are you going to live in Cyprus just because you like halloumi so much?
Because if I want to be in, I'm a resident of Dubai officially, but if I want to have residency in Europe, it's actually very, very hard to get a visa as a Brit now anywhere in the EU. But Cyprus is non-Schengen, and it also has this traditional historic friendship with Brits. And so they're very friendly to Brits and Israelis who want to move there and live there, which means I would still be in Europe. I would love to be in Spain, but I just couldn't get past the visa thing in Spain.
You'd be the same time zone as me.
Oh, there you go. Would I? Are you that far east?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So cool. I'm 2 hours ahead of UK time.
Okay.
That's what you'd be as well.
Yeah.
So That'd be interesting. And but what are you going to do to fuck this up, though? So, like, what crimes are you going to commit in the next few weeks to ensure?
Well, presumably, if Cyprus is full of ex-IDF people, I'll probably just get into a barroom brawl and just get arrested and nicked, and then I don't know, thrown out for that, probably.
And presumably, you're going to do something really stupid.
Well, typically, I mean, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior.
Yeah.
So,
You're going to smuggle something into America, it's.
Listen, did you
Mr. Grannan, what's that piece of rope doing out of your posterior? I have dysentery, officer.
Dysentery. Don't bug it out. Oh, I would hate that if you forcefully pulled it out. You know what I did was really stupid. When I came in from Mexico to San Diego, I'd bought big bottles of legal supplements like magnesium and zinc, and that's what they saw on the fucking scanner. Then they opened my bag and they found the testosterone kit. I was like, why did I bring bucket loads of pills that clearly on a scanner would show us? And they were like, do you have medication? I was like, yes, I do. And then I was fucked. Stupid, very, very stupid, especially on a flight coming in from Mexico where people are known to buy these things and bring them to America. Particularly dumb moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, like a bit like the dumb moment of editing Trump's speech so that it was a completely different speech.
Quite so. Very, very foolish and self-destructive. No one's perfect. By what metric are you measuring them? I mean, they're people, they're the BBC, they're British, they love the United Kingdom, they represent the best of British values. You, as a crass Darwinian right-wing bigoted supremacist thug, you just don't like their love and kindness. You're anti-tolerance and anti-kindness. That's your problem with you people.
I am anti-kindness, yeah. I regard kindness as a kind of love bombing. It's just manipulative.
And, degeneracy. I agree. Yeah, kindness is sentimental.
Less kind. But the thing is, we shouldn't be kind to the BBC any more than we should be kind to my brilliant BPD comparison to the BBC. Because if you're kind to them, then they don't really love you. Because if they loved you, they wouldn't lie to you. They wouldn't manipulate you. So they don't love you really.
That means I must love you an awful lot, Ed.
Yeah, what they like is the attention and the feeling of being loved. That's what they like, but I don't know if they're actually capable of feeling love back. And that's what I see.
Ed, Richard, and Paul, why are you guys such cowards? You're cowards.
What the fuck are you on about now,
Lipton? What I love most about you is you never knowingly ask a leading question.
You're cowards. You need to be in the streets shouting and talking about England and the greatness of England and debating college students.
What is the consequence in the United Kingdom now of doing that? I don't wish
nothing at all.
You can be put in prison. You could be literally put in prison. Ed's asking me about stupid decisions I could possibly make. That's one of them. I could be put in prison for a Facebook post. Never mind going in the streets.
You can be rebuked by the BBC as a newsreader for a slight facial expression. As happened with Martine Croxall. She said she corrected pregnant people to women and then did a sort of like this. And for that, she was found to have broken their editorial standards.
Well, but on another occasion, she did something really woke and she was like saying, I'm so happy about something.
You guys are cowards. I know somebody who wrote an entire book. He's a retired professor. And do you know what he said? Do you want me to tell you what he said?
Not if it's offensive, Lipton. It causes problems on YouTube, no.
If it starts with blacks always, then no.
No, it doesn't start with blacks. He said that slave revolts were not really about abolishing slavery.
Go on, a little, carefully.
He said that many of the slaves, they revolted when they were badly treated or when the elites wanted their freedom.
What do you deduce from that, Lipton?
What have I deduced?
Oh, yes.
Slave revolts were really class warfare. Slaves were not always badly treated. That was not the main reason why they revolted.
But
they did not revolt because they wanted to overthrow the system.
Are you intimating they were happy in their slavery?
Some of them were. Some of them were happy.
My dear fellow, that is absurd. Why would you say, you're an intelligent man. How could you think something so insane?
Me and you
need to have a conversation about this on my philosophy channel specifically, because I want to do a video about the transatlantic slave trade.
You
and
should.
I know you have strong opinions about it. So do
have
I.
You,
but
Richard,
that's insane.
You are a card-carrying pervert, aren't you, Richard?
Yes, yes.
So have you heard of, there's a famous erotic novel called The Story of O?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Well, if you read the preface to that, it's all about a plant. It's, I don't know how apocryphal it is, but a plantation when the owner had to free the slaves because it became law. They hung him because he let them free and they lost security.
Yes, but that's not an indicator. See, I've heard this argument multiple times. It's a bad understanding of the psychology of the people who are there. These are people who have gone through just insane amounts
of torture.
I
never made a judgment. I'm just describing.
No. It's to this point. The idea that slaves liked slavery, it's like when somebody who's been severely abused or very institutionalized by prison wants to go back to the prison or wants to go back to the abuser, they didn't know anything else. So I believe these stories where they want their security back, they want order back, but they were born into this tortured state.
Slaves do not like slavery. Revolts in history are not unusual, but specifically when we're talking about some slave, these people, they were usually in positions of bondage. No, their slavery was different. So, for example,
before they went to the New World,
they were about around 90% of them were in a position of bondage. So they were either slaves.
Oh, in Africa, bondage. Yeah, okay,
yes, and they did migrate. Alone, they often migrated with other people.
Slaves that had status in the world of slaves.
But yeah. Irish slaves were indentured and they were not treated as black slaves.
Like
they were human rights.
People at the big house. And yeah. So they perhaps would have quite liked.
Well, just to throw something else into the mix, I once remember a neighbour here in Wales said to me, can you imagine, have you ever seen a documentary about the Welsh slate mines? And how horrific they were as working environments. And he said, think of that. You're completely, basically indentured to the mining company. You're working in shitty Welsh rainy conditions versus being in the Caribbean. How much worse? You know, I'm not excusing slavery in any shape or form.
The Caribbean is where they were tortured deliberately to see which slaves could tolerate it. It was a process called seasoning.
Yeah,
it
I was
included
about to say that. But Richard,
the seasoning process.
Seasoning was
I must
done
go.
By
I love you all. You're my favorite racists.
Seasoning
goodbye, everyone.
Was done by slaves.
My darlings, goodbye.
Yeah, Richard is the
Conway, what we should understand is that in the Welsh miners were tortured with spit and weird toast with cheese on. It's very 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 unpleasant.
White slavery in Europe had no lobbyist. So when the British owned slaves in the West Indies, white people would leave England to go to the Caribbean to study the system of slavery to say that it was dangerous or brutal. White people had no advocates in Europe.
I heard something quite interesting recently, which was that you used to have, the Quakers were an example of people that did this, you'd have these model villages where the workers in the factory or whatever would live in a village that was owned by the factory owner. This was quite useful for you. The idea was it's a kind thing. It means they don't have to go so far to go to work. It means they, but it also means that the factory owner controls them because he owns their house as well as their job. So if they lose their job, they lose their house. And I heard today, I was listening to Academic Adrian, and he was saying that when Henry Ford set up, they realized this was a problem. You don't want all your workers living in the same place. Because if they do, then they'll fraternize and they'll talk and they'll bond and they'll plan. and they'll unionize. So what you actually want is them living in disparate places so they can't become friends and they can't bond. And then they're easier to control, which I thought was interesting. And I suppose that was one of the problems with slavery, is that the distinction between the workers and the non-workers is so stark and obvious that, of course, they can get together and plan and rebel.
And that's why large plantations were so brutal, because on a large plantation, the planter exercises authority to thwart rebellions. On a smaller plantation, there was a closer relationship between planter and slaves. Those plantations were less brutal, but the probability of people revolting on a larger plantation, it was a greater probability. So the planter had to be particularly brutal to stem revolts. And back to what you said, Paul, about working, again, this historian, a prominent historian, he said that when you compare slave labor in the West Indies to labor in Europe, the labor of working class people, the slaves did not work harder. So if Europeans worked 10 hours, slaves worked 9 or 10 hours. So slaves did not work excessively harder than working class people in Europe.
But then the question is, Lipton, how important, I mean, I like the way that you always manage to steer things around to slavery. It's very interesting. But how important is it to psychological happiness to feel that you're free? And how does that balance against what you're saying, which is that the extent to which you have to work?
Well, interestingly, Ed, freedom and happiness are predominantly Western values. So in Africa, freedom and happiness were linked to one's position in the community. So a slave in Africa was somebody who was a stranger. You were a stranger in the community. You were kinless. Therefore, you were a slave. So the extent to one became happy was really linked to his sense of status or being in the community. So human beings tend to have a propensity for autonomy, but autonomy is not equally distributed along racial lines.
Okay, So you're saying that the desire for freedom is a kind of weird, and the sense of being
Western
free is a kind of weird thing.
Yes.
Could I ask a question about I've always been interested in the conquistadores in South America, and it always interests me that that's never a form of slavery that ever seems to be discussed. And I've seen footage of Hispanic people in America, Latinos, talking about the horrors of colonialism. And I'm thinking, you don't have to read many books to realize how horrific the Aztecs and Incas were to subordinate people in their culture. These slight odd historical inconvenience of human sacrifice, for example.
Well, let me tell you this, Joe Paul, this academic, he wrote a piece some years ago basically saying that the Aztecs were pro-social people and that human sacrifice in the Aztec society was basically exaggerated and we should think about it in cultural terms because the Aztecs were pro-social and they only sacrificed people for specific events. So we shouldn't think too much about human sacrifice.
I just,
from what I've read, it was just standard that if you dominated another village or community, because you were victors in war, there was no mercy, you were treated as subhuman.
Well, in many non-Western cultures, the language, not the language, but the name of the group literally means real people are true people. We are the only people.
People are going on about how many viewers we've got. We have about 300 less than normal, and I assume that those 300 have betrayed us by going and watching this woman with the Greek name.
Louis, Emily Yukis.
Is there any way to track them down and ban them from future
it's
streams?
It's just outrageous. You know, it's outrageous behaviour. We had the same viewership as we have now when Darren was last on. They're all discussing that in the chat, which I can only see because I have it at the bottom of the screen because they've deliberately attacked my tism by messing around. But there you go. We've got 20 minutes to get the viewership up to new. Hello, Finbear. How are you doing? to get the viewership. So there's an incongruence between what I'm seeing in the chat if I put it into a small screen and what I'm seeing in the chat if I have it in a large screen, so I can actually judge the facial expressions of my colleagues and not offend them, which is very important for the TISM, that you don't want to offend people, and so you need to see their faces. Like Paul, for example, has looked very stern. So one wonders what one's done. Ed, we love you, says Alan's 984. Thank you very much. I love you too. In different ways, depending on your sex.
Oh, can I answer this one? There's someone saying, discuss the psychology of people who own XL bullies.
We haven't had any super chats either. What's going on there? Emily on his channel, that is what the problem of interviewing Emily on this channel is that it can get you banned. Oh, really? Oh, so it would be like a YouTube-only thing. Okay. I imagine that they're just stupid and neurotic. Why on earth would you want to have a really dangerous dog?
Well, this is the problem. From what I've read, there was a particular bloodline of a really mad, psychopathic American XL bully. The actual type of dog, because I have two Staffordshire Bull Terriers, and they are brilliant with people. That is normally their genetic line, but highly aggressive to other dogs often. But XL bullies can be absolutely wonderful, but if you've got one from the wrong bloodline, what tends to happen is, and you'd know more about this than me, Ed, but when dogs suddenly become popular, they breed them very quickly to meet the demand. They're not very picky over the bloodlines. Whereas, for example, Staffies now, there are so many of them, it's quite a wide genetic pool and they tend to be healthier. I remember Rottweilers in the UK suddenly became popular, and there's a lot of unhealthy Rottweilers at one point.
A lot of mental Rottweilers. And then there was that case in 1990, I think it was, of this girl called Ruxana Khan, and she was 9 years old, and she was mauled by a Rottweiler in a park. And then we had the Dangerous Dogs Act. And all of these various Rottweilers were put down. And I didn't know that was a consequence of their popularity. But, yeah, this is what they're going to do. And they breed them, and they breed them with their cousins and close relatives and so forth. And then you get, obviously, mentally ill dogs.
It's a bit like a canine version of Norfolk.
Yes, I guess so. That's what they do. Like Springer Spaniels were popular. And so, as a consequence, in the 60s, they became popular. And so, as a consequence, you get lots of mental Springer Spaniels that are inbred. My Springer, I had Springer Spaniel as a kid. He was inbred. He clearly was inbred.
What's your least favourite dog, Ed? Your least favourite breed of dog?
That barks loudly. I don't like. I don't see the need for them to bark. So if it barks loudly, I don't like it. But in terms of, like, an ugly dog, I wouldn't buy a pug. They look disgusting. Pug. And also, what's that one that Princess Anne had? A Staffordshire Bull Terrier? Bloody ugly things.
Oh, do you mean the English Bull Terrier with the slopey head?
Yeah, ugly.
Oh, I love those. They're so ugly. They're beautiful.
No. I don't know. I like Springer Spaniels, Cocker Spaniels. A golden retrievers.
Oh no! I was going to say they are the digestive biscuit of the dog world. They're boring. They're plain, neutral. They have no personality.
Are they licky?
They're just there.
I like licky dogs. So if they're licky,
well, Staffies are very licky.
Yeah, but they're ugly bastards. So
Staffies aren't beautiful dogs. Staffordshire Bull Terrier. They have quite an attractive baby. Like, this is one of the reasons that, like, dogs evoke great human emotion, because their faces are like babies, and Staffy's face is very much like a baby's. And when they put their ears back, they have like this seal, you know, like a little baby seal.
Oh, seals I like, yeah.
It's that look, you know, just before you club them over the head, they give you this beautiful look.
They do. They're like the dogs of the water.
I like birds.
Do you, Ibsen?
I like birds.
What type of birds, Lipton?
It doesn't matter. I like all birds and I like to eat them. Birds are yummy.
They are. You like eating birds, but I mean, we're talking.
And I like penguins. I like birds. I like birds.
Have you ever eaten a penguin?
Maybe some years ago. Yes, I did. And I like ducks. I like to eat ducks.
Yeah, but we're talking about having a relationship with an animal.
Yeah. I like to look at birds.
You like to eat. You like to kill them and eat them,
and look at them.
Yeah, we don't like to eat dogs. We don't. Me and Paul, we don't.
I'd eat a golden retriever.
Paul, question. When we go to a university to give a lecture, what do you want to talk about?
Eating golden retrievers.
Okay.
I don't eat swans, no. I don't know what the swans... I imagine swans just taste like ducks. So,
Do you ever see that sketch for Monty Python, Albatross? Come and get your albatross!
Again, I imagine they taste very fishy, I've not eaten an albatross though personally.
A John Cleese acts as a usherette in a cinema, and all he's got is albatross. And I think Eric Idle comes up to him and says, "Can I have a chock ice?" And he goes, "Bugger off! I'm only selling albatross."
Yeah, fair enough. I'm only selling loosely farm ice cream. I haven't had that. I've had what are you doing, Lipson? I've had Lipson's getting on the dress. Yeah, all right, fair enough. I've had pigeon.
Pigeon's quite dry.
Yeah. I've had pheasant.
Yeah, I've had pheasant, but you gotta look out for the buckshot, don't you?
Yeah.
I like pork and lamb.
Yeah, but we'll get back to birds. What's the most exotic bird you've eaten, Lipton?
Just the pigeon, and I like ducks, but I haven't eaten as many as I would like.
I've had ostrich steaks. Yeah, ostrich steaks are
good. Oh, I've had ostrich. Yeah, I have had that. Yeah. That was disappointing, to be honest.
I've had quail. Quail's nice.
I've not had quail.
No, France, they do them in little casseroles, and they fall off the bone.
Oh, lovely. Very nice. Very nice.
And they basically shoot songbirds, or they used to when they migrate. They'd shoot and they'd net them.
That was the thing that they did when that guy Dick Cheney died. I think one of the most significant things he did was just shoot someone in the face with birdshot, which at close range can be, I imagine, quite injurious. And that's what he did after he retired as president. He just shot this friend of his in the face with
Dick
with
birdshot. Cheney.
Yes, the Dick Cheney,
an excellent man,
former vice president of America, and he just shot. This is so irresponsibly stupid.
It's a great name for an S&M advocate, isn't it?
But he's died. Yeah, it was friendly fire, says Tommy M5023. But it was really, really stupid and irresponsible to shoot your friend in the face. I mean, imagine.
Well, they have loads of shooting accidents in America.
But you're careful when you're with a gun. You're careful what you do. When
do you think, Ed, if you and I went out on a hunt, do you think we'd be careful? It would be like the Wild West. So you could shoot who first?
We wouldn't be that careful. No,
I'd be taking pot shots at you. Bloody hell!
We'd be mainly taking pot shots at Richard. But it would be, wouldn't that be cool? Like to get Richard to go on a safari, and the idea is to find Richard in the thicket and shoot him.
We wait though. We could steal his steroids. Wait till he starts jonesing, and then let him loose, and then we could hunt him down.
I'm not familiar with the word jonesing. What does that mean?
I believe it's what the people on the street say when you are withdrawing from your drug of choice.
Okay. I learned a new word in September, which is blissing, which is if you've had a religious experience, a really serious, profound one, then the emotional consequences can go on for quite a long time, like weeks or months. And during that time, you are blissing. Because you're in a state of bliss, and then eventually you calm down, and need to have something hang on a minute.
Richard's back.
I don't know. I think that's probably a mistake because he's meant to be speaking to a solicitor.
No, Richard's back.
Hi, Richard. How was your meeting?
Hi, guys. Oh, they're going to fix everything for me.
Oh, that's brilliant.
We were just discussing, someone in the comments called it Free Range Richard. Our plan is, we talked about bird hunting because Lipton took us off track.
Yes.
And we were going to take your steroids off you until you started jonesing, then put you in the wild, and we would hunt you down like Dick Cheney shooting his friend.
Oh, if you take me off steroids, I won't fight back. Like within a month, I'm really floppy and really energy. I have no fight left in me. I'm like, yeah, you may as well, as long as I can take a nap. Talk. I wouldn't be much sport. I wouldn't be much sport after a month off steroids, I can assure you. Everything flatlines. The whole system just goes. Meow.
A supine Richard. I'm strangely.
I just take Viagra or something.
Well, you could, but you wouldn't have any. I wouldn't have any sexual desire behind it. This is all because I took stuff that stops your hair falling out called
Richard,
Finistreed.
What's that got to do with anything?
Kids in the chat, don't take Finistreed. In 5% of the male population, it give you permanent problems.
Richard,
with your
can you explain something very important to me? What has your partner's sexual desire got to do with anything?
I believe that you have to have some sexual desire for Viagra to work.
Yeah, you do. If you're flatlined and you took Viagra, the only thing that would happen is it flushes your face. Because you're not sending signals to the genitals that you want something. So it goes, okay, we're going to engorge blood vessels. So I knew guys used to take it on the door when they were cold to warm up. Really, really smart, educated people.
I was going to say, Richard, did a friend tell you about this?
Oh no, I didn't. Well, they would just stand there with a red face and a semi-erect penis at 1 o'clock at night in Victoria Street, waiting for a fight to happen like this.
That was my average Saturday night.
Eddie, Richard and Paul. So some parts of Jamaica were destroyed by Hurricane Melissa. Are you going to donate to Jamaica? Donate food or money?
No, I'm a very cruel and selfish man.
It's okay. You don't have to. It's not because of climate change or anything like that. The climate is always changing.
Mm. Lipton, were your family okay in the...
Yeah, they're okay because they live in an urban area. So it was the rural areas that were badly damaged.
They live on a hill?
No, in a flat. But rural Jamaica is really poor. So the rural parts of Jamaica, Westmoreland, St. Elizabeth, they were badly damaged.
Is that because of the nature of the housing there?
Infrastructure. Infrastructure is the problem.
Okay. Well, you're also more exposed to the wind, aren't you?
Mm. Yeah, infrastructure is a problem, and a lot of poor people.
You know, sheltered by all the buildings.
Jamaica has been getting a lot of money from people all over the world, from the EU, from the UK. The Israelis are in Jamaica. All sorts of people.
But Mummy and Daddy Lipton are okay.
Yeah, they're okay. Yes. And extended relatives are okay.
I was praying for them. even though I don't know what they look like. Well, other than that, I still look a bit like you. But that's good. That's
some people are this poet. Well, resident poet Queen, he liked my tweet recently because the lady from the UK, she said that the British are responsible for Jamaica's fiscal liabilities, and people are also saying that because of climate change, rich countries like England should compensate poor countries. But this is not because of climate change.
Well, I think it's going to get to a point where we rich countries, I mean, we're in such a terrible state because of dysgenics and ridiculous woke policies that we won't be able to afford to pay money to poor countries.
Like, given 20 years, they'll be sending us money.
Yeah, exactly.
the difference between poor countries and rich countries is going to get smaller. I mean, like, if you go to some parts of the UK now, even when I was in Liverpool, these IKEA tents that you don't need to pitch, that you just unfold them, put something heavy on them, and they're there.
And in Liverpool, that's called a conservatory.
That is. In some parts of Liverpool, perhaps, but that just encourages these people to just live in the street. And in the old days, they had to do things like find a doorway or just not live in the street.
Or squat.
But now everybody can just be Diogenes the cynic, and just be a philosopher that lives in the street. And it's not good enough.
We need to form the Prime Minister of England, Ed Dutton for PM.
I think I'd be very good at it. And there'd be a number of things I do, such as that you can't live in the street. And we won't allow that. So you can't live in the street or the park. Or you've got to go and get a house. And that would be my view. And I'd just stop it. I'd pack it all in. And there'd be no... And then I would...
This is like the most depressing commencement speech ever made.
I just basically return us to the 2nd of May 1997 in every way. I pass an act of oblivion undoing any law passed since then. And then we just stop and we just stay there.
While you're rambling, Ed, can I ask you a very specific question? I've never understood the psychology of. Have you ever seen in the countryside? It wouldn't happen in Finland. But in the UK, people clean up after their dogs, but they leave like fluorescent bags of dog poo in the countryside. It's this passive aggressive thing. There aren't any bins to put them in because it's the countryside, but they want to show that they're doing something proactive, but they're actually making sure that crap is going to stay there for the next 1,000 years. It's the single most annoying thing.
They're shit vert shitful signalling. It's outrageous.
But can you explain the logic? It makes I'm itching to see someone.
Well, it's considered bad to allow your dog to foul the grass or whatever, even though we managed to cope with dogs doing that until about 1990, and there was no problem at all. I mean, there are people that are alive today that have never seen a white dog turd.
What caused that? There's an article about that I didn't bother reading, but I wish I had known.
It was a sudden idea that I think it might have been some case of some baby picking up shit and rubbing it in her eyes and going blind or something.
No. But why was the poo white?
I don't know. I can't remember why, but it's not just with dog shit. It's with cow shit and any other kind of shit. If you leave it for long enough, it loses, it begins to rot and the brown colouring. I'll have to look up why. It's quite good.
Yeah, but this is the point. It used to be white. There used to be fairy white dog crap.
Yeah.
It might be something to do with their diet or something.
It was the length of time they were left. It was the length of time they were left.
They obviously lose whatever it is will decompose.
Deoxidization.
Well, in Liverpool, there was a piece of dog crap in our living room for about a year, and that never went white.
Well, are you sure that was dog crap? It wasn't from maybe like Danny Lowe or the, you know.
That was dog crap.
We weren't
savages, Ed.
It's exposure to the air and inside of a room.
It had exposure to was cigarette smoke. The cigarette smoke kept it
cigarette smoke and despair.
Yeah. Cigarette smoke and ennui.
Ennui?
All right, ennui, whatever. No, that's the footballer. It kept exposure to a footballer, and then it kept it the right cut, but that's why, because cow shit as well goes white. I remember seeing white cow shits in a field in Dorset when I was a kid. So, but these people never seen a white shit.
Yeah, but I think the theory is that nowadays it wouldn't go white. I think they've put something in their food.
No, it's bound to. But the reason they do it is to feel good about themselves, to feel that they haven't done.
But no, Ed. If there's enough anti-rotting preservatives in the dog food, maybe it keeps the shit fresh. Maybe the shit is full of anti-rotting preservatives. Maybe
I think so.
Do you think bird shit goes brown if you leave it long enough?
That's almost like a Zen koan. You've really made me think.
It's called guano, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually a combination of urine and shit. They just have one hole. It's called a cloaca, through which both turds and pisses pass. And they're mixed together. And so when people say things like, oh, it's tight as a duck's ass, you're tight as a duck's ass. A duck doesn't have an ass, right? It has a cloaca.
Why are you saying it in sort of a Finnish way?
I don't know. But maybe because I see ducks in the pond at the bottom of my garden in the forest. But a duck has a quacker. This is the point. And
I thought it was cloaca. Has it got an L in it?
Sorry, right. Cloaca, yeah.
It sounds like a Scouse so, punk band. Clawacha.
So it's important to understand that ducks, you can't, a duck doesn't have a tight arse. The duck doesn't have an arse. By the way, Lipton, we're up to 2,000.
I think you've been a bit pedantic, Ed.
Yes.
Well, a duck does not have an arse.
Well, yeah, it has a close associative orifice.
It has a cloaca through which both turds and pisses pass. Right. That's it.
No, you just separated out the two entities. You said they were combined.
I'm so glad I came back.
Yes.
You learn things. That's the thing. I don't say I never learn you nothing.
Exactly. No, but I want to go, before we go, Ed, you've just contradicted yourself. Cloacal effluent is a hybrid, neither one nor the other.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shit piss combo.
Yeah, but you keep separating them out as if they suddenly combine. They're not. They were never those things in the first place. I don't want to get all ontological about it, but I do think cloacal effluent is an important issue.
There's a study paper title here: cloacal effluent, pee pee poo poo, ontological structures by Dr. Paul Taylor. I think that would be amazing to see published. Don't you agree?
I want to make Richard Grannan famous. I want Richard to interview me again on his big channel.
Because you want to ride on my coattails. What is it with you? You should be blaming the power for yourself, Lipton. Go forth and multiply. You don't need us. You don't need us. We're redundant. Decentralize these old white men. They're unnecessary.
No, I regret the passing of the great race. I really do.
Charlie Pepper loves these intellectual chats, and it's right. It's true. These are the kind. This is why we're here. I mean,
I'm going to start a Substack called Tales of Cloaca.
You should.
We had 700 viewers when we were talking about the BBC and all their.
But
now we have
Remember Tales of the Unexpected, and that could be the beginning. And then out the tail of a duck comes this cloacal mess.
Yeah.
Tales of the unexpected.
I have a new piece coming out, Richard, on Judeo-Christianity.
Ooh.
Yes.
Nice. I look forward to that.
Yes. I'd like to talk about Judeo-Christianity.
I like that story you did about the guy that stole umbrellas. You remember that story? And he'd go up to people in the rain and he'd give them an umbrella in return, or he'd persuade them to buy an umbrella, and then he'd go back and steal an umbrella.
Someone stole my umbrella in a Welsh restaurant. I was eating with some friends and my wife, and it was a really weird bat-shaped thing because it was from Holland, and it was anti, it could never turn inside out because it was designed in this weird way. And so I knew it was mine. And he went outside, and because you had to pull it in the opposite direction, he struggled with it, so I knew it was mine. So I ran outside and confronted him, and he was the chef who'd just knocked off for the night. So I got my brolly back, and I paid the bill, and the guy goes, "Oh yeah, that was the chef. No apology, nothing."
It was promised that brolly 2,000 years ago.
So the BBC.
You showed no empathy then with my sad brolly tale.
Well, I don't have empathy, do I? We know that, we've discussed this. That's why people want to confide in me, because I have no empathy. No. And I just listen, and they might as well confide in a stone. But they've got.
Have you ever cared?
I don't care. No, I don't care.
Care.
Oh, you are a mucky kid. Strawberry jam tarts in your hair.
That's not fair,
Richard. Richard and Ed and Paul. New story. Ed, especially because Ed is the researcher. Ed, I think it's time for you to write a paper on the link between vitamin D and height.
I can see how there might be a link between vitamin D and height.
It's a big link.
I'll do that, but...
What would happen if you force-fed a pregnant woman loads of vitamin D? Would they have a really massive baby?
The weirdest thing happened to me and my daughter the other day. We were in Prisma, which is the local sort of supermarket, and there was this mother, and then one of her children was a dwarf, the girl, and then another one, her son, was a giant. It was amazing. Now, what are the odds? What are the odds? Extraordinary.
You are like the Carl Pilkington of this panel. You are fascinated by strange scenarios and people. You love
it. These strange scenarios just happen to me, don't they? What is the lot? I feel there's a lot of dwarfism. You see, like relative to England, you see quite a lot of dwarfism.
Why is that?
Small
gene. What's the crass Darwinian explanation?
Well, crass and correct Darwinian explanation would be small gene pool.
Ed, is your daughter an adult yet?
Are you interested?
No, Richard, I want her to get married to Richard when she's an adult.
Well, she's 16.
Okay.
No, she's too young. When she's like in her 20s, she can't get married to Richard, her cousin.
It's quite a big age difference.
Yeah. Richard is rich.
So it's like a 31-year age difference. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Right. I don't think age matters that much when you're kept in a basement.
I'm so glad I came back.
All right, chaps, we're gonna round up now. So it was a pleasure to see you all, and we will see you all next Monday. And tally ho, and goodbye.
Goodbye.